Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Today's episode is presented by Meta.
A virtual reality platform created by Fundamental VR and Orbis International helps train doctors to treat cataracts, resulting in more confident surgeons operating worldwide. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
I'm sorry I've been away from my desk for much longer than I would have liked.
To defeat this virus, we need a vaccine, better treatment methods, and large-scale testing.
How is it possible for us to be stronger after this crisis?
Hi, and welcome to the latest of our special extra editions of EU Confidential, focusing on Europe's response to the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Andrew Gray, Politico's EU editor. Hope you're all doing okay wherever you're listening. Later in the podcast, you'll hear from someone directly involved in crafting the EU's plans to revive the economy after the huge damage caused as a result of the coronavirus. That's Elisa Ferreira, the European Commissioner for Cohesion and Reforms. But first, let's check in with one of our healthcare reporters, Carmen Pound. So today we're talking about two topics, I would say, that are probably pretty close to your heart, because we're talking about workers from your home country of Romania and from other places who are at the moment used as seasonal workers, or have been for many years used as seasonal workers in Western Europe, and how they're affected by the coronavirus, by the pandemic. So what did you find when you looked into this in terms of what's being done? Are they still able to travel? And what kind of measures are being taken, to protect their health?
They are still able to travel, and they're the few ones among many Europeans, I would say, that are still able to travel. Initially, they weren't, but then farmers in Germany, the UK, and other countries, mainly in the west of Europe, figured out that they're not going to have enough workforce. Even if they draw in people that have lost their jobs, or even if they have enough people, they're not skilled enough, they're not fast enough to be able to really pick all the fruits and vegetables in time for them to make it safely to the market. So they, in many cases, they put pressure on their governments to find a way to allow seasonal workers that they have had in previous years to be able to come. And this has happened indeed. And they are now charter flights, probably at least every other day, from Romania, Bulgaria, and other Eastern European countries to take people to farms in Germany, the UK, and I've seen Italy and probably Spain too. And, you know, their conditions have typically been quite tough. They work a lot. The job is pretty taxing physically. I was talking to one younger who was telling me that, you know, when you pick asparagus, for example, you have to spend your time on all fours to be able to pick it fast. And that could be for an hour, a workday that is longer than 12 hours with a few breaks. And the pandemic has only made things worse, because now some of the experts we were talking to were saying that they're even more open to exploitation, because, for example, in the case of Germany, the moment they arrive, they are taken to the farm and they have to stay in a sort of quarantine for 14 days. So they're allowed to work, but they are only within the group that they came with. And they're not allowed to go outside of the farm for those 14 days and also mix with other people. And then also, if they do not like the conditions and want to leave, they have no flights to go back home, because the flights that they came with were chartered by their employers. So while in a way they're very needed and they should probably be shown appreciation by proper working conditions and proper pay too, it looks like actually the situation is exposing them to potentially even more exploitative conditions.
And what are the health measures that are being taken, both in terms of how they travel, and then once they're on site doing this work, to try and protect their health?
Normally, there should be social distancing. So, for example, in the flight, they should be staying at least one aisle away from each other. There shouldn't be probably anyone in the middle seat, as far as we understand. The problem is, in the buses getting to the airport, When this started in Romania, I think the first flights took off around April 9th. There were thousands of people brought in buses and sat one next to the other and then just left in front of the airport. So there was a crowd of about 2,000 people that were not respecting any social distancing measures. That has gotten better in the meantime. And they're also it's also unclear how these measures are respected in the buses that take them from the airport to the farms. Once they get there, normally they would be put in rooms with more people. That's still going to be the case. But for example, the German government asked that they are put in rooms at half capacity. So for example, if it was a room for 10 people, you'd have 5 people put in the same room. So there's a bit of distance. If they go to work and they cannot be away from each other on the field or in the places where they pick fruits and vegetables, they are supposed to be given protective equipment. The problem is also that you do lump people together in the same group. So you do expose people from that group to each other. And if one of them is sick, then others might get sick. So it's not, you know, it's not foolproof.
And what are we hearing kind of anecdotally about whether all these kind of rules and regulations are being respected so far?
The Romanian media has been reporting quite a lot lately. And for example, there were people saying that they had to wear the same mask for 5 days. That obviously gets full of dust very fast, but they're not provided with a new one every day. There has been a case of a man who died in Germany while picking asparagus. And now the Romanian media is reporting that he did say that he couldn't breathe and he was isolated in his room and he was found dead the next day. And the postmortem test showed that he had coronavirus, so he wasn't diagnosed before that. So there are complaints that they are that these rules are not properly applied and people are feeling they're not getting the necessary support they would want to have in the situation. There have also been a few reports of people saying that everything is fine and these rules have been respected and they had no problems.
Mm. What's the Romanian government in particular saying about all of this?
So far, there hasn't been much from the Romanian government on the situation. They did say in the first few days that they are not able to stop people that want to go to work and that have a work contract from doing so, that it's people's freedom of movement right. Also, the Romanian prime minister said at the beginning of April that there are at least 1 million jobs that have been suspending during the pandemic. So obviously, trying to give these people opportunities at home is harder now than it was before. But many of them were going even before because obviously they could earn a lot more in 3 months worth of work in Germany, for example, that they could earn probably double of time in, you know, by staying back home in their villages or towns in Romania.
Mm. Does the EU have any role to play here, the Commission or others, or is this really a bilateral matter between, you know, Germany and Romania or the countries that are, you know, that are taking these workers and using them?
We asked the Commission about it. So they did release guidance also at the end of March saying that, you know, seasonal agriculture workers are critical and they should be allowed to travel also after the proper health checks. And this has happened. And the Commission has also released guidance, so health guidance for how to organize work to make sure that, you know, you minimize the risk of infection as much as possible. But as always, when it comes to really enforcing these rules, this is up to the country where this is happening. So the Commission doesn't have power to really check that these guidelines are applied. And obviously, there are also recommendations. They're not mandatory.
Do we have any idea of the numbers, you know, of how many have traveled so far, or how many seasonal workers there are who do this kind of work in a normal year, like from Romania or other places?
So there are hundreds of thousands. This year, Germany said that it needed only for April and May, Germany said that it needed 80,000, so 40,000 for each month. And I asked the Romanian authorities for data of how many have traveled from Romania since charter flights started operating. So pretty much between the 9th of April and the 23rd of April, so in that space of 2 weeks, there have been 14,700 people who flew away, so almost 15,000 people. And the Romanian prime minister was saying that it might actually be up to 80 to 90,000 that Germany and other countries have asked for.
Well, as you say, they must be maybe the largest group of people who are actually traveling at this time. So we obviously hope that they remain in good health, and I'm sure you'll continue to follow the story. Thanks, Carmen.
Thank you, Andrew.
Now let's get to our featured guest, Commissioner Elisa Ferreira, who's responsible for cohesion and reforms at the European Commission. She spoke with our colleague, Lily Beyer.
So Commissioner, perhaps to start with, for those of our listeners who are not that familiar with your job, what does it mean to work on cohesion and reforms, and what is your role in the current crisis?
Well, probably you don't know what is cohesion and reforms, but everybody knows what cohesion funds are. There is no citizen almost in Europe that has not benefited from support to small and medium enterprises, from schools, roads, railways, water sewage, water supply. All these funds are the cohesion policy. And this cohesion policy is very much connected with the origin of Europe and the single market. Cohesion, in fact, helps the weaker part to be able to play the game. And now it is becoming much more crucial than before. Because, first of all, the crisis affected differently different member states and different regions. And the capacity of member states to stimulate by themselves the economy is very different, because certain member states have strong finances and have been benefiting from this competition for ages, and now they can really bring forward all their firepower to support their economy, whereas others, they cannot do it unless they get into very, very heavy debt. And if they get into very heavy debt, they are in trouble. Probably not now, but in the short term, they will be.
Building on what you just said, in 2018, the Commission proposed that the EU spend 330 billion euros over 7 years, specifically on cohesion policy. And some regions were a bit concerned at the time, because that meant in real terms about a 10% cut to cohesion policy. Now the Commission is working on a new proposal. Do you think that the Commission should propose more money specifically toward cohesion to help those regions that are now behind or face these imbalances that you mentioned? Do we need more money?
Yeah, we need more money, definitely, yes. We need more money because the loss was much bigger, or will be much bigger once we calculate it, than we had anticipated. So, of course, we need more money. This can be done through the MFF as usual, or it can be done through other means. But I would really support the idea that we should make use of the instruments that are already available on the ground, that countries and regions are familiar with, so that we have this speedy capacity to start combating the crisis and combating the loss of jobs. But it is important also that the efforts that the Commission is doing will have an appropriate answer from those that finally decide. The Parliament was very constructive. If you recall, it was really going much further than the proposal from the Commission. But now it is really the moment for us to do something very, very blunt, very strong, and that can actually solve the issues that are at stake. And these issues are absolutely crucial for the survival of the European Union as such.
And when you talk about more money through the long-term budget, would you support some of that money coming from funds that the Commission would raise on financial markets, as discussed by Commission President von der Leyen recently?
Of course, I think that is absolutely essential. I don't think this is only a matter of solidarity. I think it's a matter of being intelligent. So it's a matter of intelligence for the survival of our common project and of our growth, that we really have this stimulus that answers extraordinary circumstances. So you cannot think business as usual. You have got to jump into an extraordinary approach to the issue.
One thing that we've been hearing about from colleagues and people around the Brussels bubble is that there's a certain worry about the future of the European Green Deal. Are you concerned that cohesion money, under the circumstances during this crisis, could go toward projects that in normal times would have triggered environmental concerns?
I hope not. I will fight as I can to keep it, even if we have here and there to fine-tune a little bit what we classify as green or not, or to see it from a regional point of view if there are some projects that could fly. But until now already, cohesion and digital were already representing 65% of the total support given by the cohesion policy for a very simple reason, because we want to support growth that is growth that is sustainable and forward looking. We don't want to have European money spent in a kind of economy that is self-defeating. And of course, now we are facing a health crisis, but I hope we won't have a climate crisis or an environmental crisis as next crisis, because there are always crises brewing in the back of our portfolios. And of course, we have got the climate agenda has got to be there, but not only climate, the green agenda, the environmental agenda, because everything is related, and the process of desertification, contamination of water, is sometimes as serious as the pure climate one. But there is no antagonism between two things. Growth without these concerns is self-defeating.
Do you foresee any changes to the Just Transition Fund proposal?
Well, I don't see the reason for that. In fact, first of all, the Just Transition Fund and Just Transition Mechanism are depending on the MFF, so we are waiting for it. But of course, certain regions, even if they are now being helped, and I was speaking with some regions in Silesia and before when we could move around, I was visiting, and in fact, this slowdown of the carbon-related industries was already going on since the 90s in certain cases, or even earlier than that. So it's a process that is going on. If now we want to speed it up for those regions that are depending completely on this kind of industry, we have got to help them to do the transition even more now than before, and safeguard jobs and foster diversification and create new jobs opportunities there.
And that's all the time we have on this episode of EU Confidential. We'll be back on Thursday with the regular podcast panel. But until then, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And feel free to rate us by clicking some stars or leaving a review. And you can always email us at podcast@politico.eu. I'm Andrew Gray in Brussels. Thanks to producer Christina Gonzalez. And thanks to you for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.